All right. So today we're going to be diving into some pretty interesting stuff. It might sound a little bit like a conspiracy theory at first, but I assure you, it's all grounded in, real events and things that are happening.
No, we're going to be exploring kind of a potential shift in how power is wielded, moving away from, the shadows of covert operations and more into like this direct financial and technological kind of control.
Exactly. And our main source for this deep dive is an article from the Geopolitical Compass. It's called From NSSM 200 to Musk's Treasury: The Evolution of America's Covert Empire. I know that's kind of a mouthful, but it really sets the stage for what we're about to get into here.
It really highlights this kind of through line. We're going to be looking at these historical examples of covert influence, and then what are the implications of that, today, with technology, especially when it's concentrated in the hands of, individuals like Elon Musk.
Right. So just to give you a little context, we're talking about recent events like Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, gaining access to the Treasury payment systems. And at the same time, USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, they're practically getting locked out of their own headquarters. Websites are down. Employees can't get in. It's a wild situation.
It's very dramatic for sure. And the timing of it is interesting as well, right? Because it
Yeah.
seems to coincide with Musk's DOGE getting this unprecedented access to the Treasury.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what's going on. So let's start by digging into USA a little bit. The article kind of paints this picture of the U.S. as a benevolent global aid provider, helping developing nations. But then it flips the script and argues that this is just a facade.
It suggests that, this idea of aid, it's often been a tool for projecting American power and influence rather than, purely altruistic humanitarian aid. And it suggests that, this approach to wielding power actually has its roots in a pretty controversial historical document.
You're talking about NSSM 200, right? This declassified document from 1974. The article makes it sound pretty explosive.
Yeah, in a way it is. NSSM 200, or the National Security Study Memorandum 200. It basically framed population growth in developing nations as a direct threat to U.S. national security.
Okay, I'm already intrigued. How could having more people in other countries be a threat to the U.S.?
Well, the document argued that, these growing populations, they would consume more resources, and that would potentially make them less available to the U.S., which would undermine its economic dominance.
So it was all about maintaining America's position on the world stage.
That seems to be the core idea, yeah. And the proposed solution was to implement population control measures, often disguised as aid programs. And it's worth noting that this was all orchestrated under Henry Kissinger, who was, a key figure in shaping U.S. foreign policy at the time.
Wow, that's a pretty stark contrast to the image of the U.S. as this benevolent global power. So how did this population control strategy actually play out?
Well, the article suggests that, aid was often used as leverage to influence the economic policies of the recipient nations, pushing them towards systems that benefited U.S. interests. And, these policies, the article argues, sometimes hindered true economic independence for these countries.
So wasn't that just about controlling population growth, but also about shaping these countries' economies to align with U.S. goals?
Precisely, yeah. And the article uses some specific examples to illustrate this point.
I'd love to hear them. I'm curious to see how this played out in the real world.
Sure. So, for instance, the article alleges that USA was involved in regime change efforts in several countries.
Regime change, you mean like actively working to overthrow governments?
That's what the article implies. Yeah. It cites examples like Ukraine, Venezuela, and Syria, for example. In Ukraine, it suggested that USA channeled funds to opposition groups in the lead up to the 2014 revolution. In Venezuela, the article claims that USAID supported attempts to destabilize the government. And in Syria, it's alleged that their funding contributed to the conflict that ultimately led to the removal of President Assad.
So, if we're connecting this back to NSSM 200, it seems like the goal was to control population growth and ensure access to resources through this combination of, direct intervention and economic influence. But where does Elon Musk fit into all of this?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. The article argues that with Musk, we're seeing a new model of control emerging, one that leverages technology and finance directly. He's not orchestrating regime change through covert ops, but potentially through his influence over these crucial systems.
Okay, I'm starting to see the connection. He's got access to treasury systems. He's building this everything app with X, formerly Twitter. It's a lot of power concentrated in one person.
Yeah, and the article suggests that this concentration of power, especially within financial systems, could be a new form of economic gatekeeping.
Gatekeeping, huh? So if Kissinger was worried about too many mouths to feed, what's Musk concerned about?
Well, think about it. You know, Musk has a hand in everything from space exploration to electric vehicles to artificial intelligence. He is in a position to shape the future, not just through his companies, but potentially through his access to and influence on government financial systems.
And this is where central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, come into play, right?
Yeah.
The article mentions them in relation to this shift in power dynamics.
Exactly. Now, a well-designed CBDC could have some benefits. It could promote financial inclusion, break up those big banking monopolies.
Yep.
It could be good. But there's also, you know, a flip side to that. Imagine a CBDC system controlled or heavily influenced by a private entity like Musk. That raises some serious questions about, you know, transparency, accountability, mm-hmm. and the potential for abuse.
That's a little unsettling.
Yeah.
So are we saying that that Musk is intentionally trying to create some kind of dystopian future?
I wouldn't go that far, no. The article doesn't accuse him of malicious intent, but it does highlight the potential, you know, for these emerging technologies, when they're concentrated in the hands of a few, to be used in ways that could limit individual freedom and autonomy.
Okay, I think we've covered a lot of ground here, from covert operations and population control to financial technology and artificial intelligence. It seems like the methods of control are evolving. But what does all of this mean for the average person?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? And that's what we'll explore further as we continue this deep dive.
Yeah, it feels like we're moving from this era of, like, shadowy Cold War tactics into this new phase where control is less about covert actions and more about, like, shaping the systems that govern our lives, you know?
Yeah, and it's not happening in some, you know, hidden bunker somewhere. We're talking about Elon Musk, a figure who's already, you know, deeply embedded in our culture and economy.
Exactly. It's not some, you know, shadowy cabal operating in the dark. It's happening out in the open with figures like Musk, who have, you know, a significant impact on our daily lives.
Let's go back to this idea of financial control for a second. The article mentions Musk having access to treasury systems. What does that mean in practical terms?
Well, imagine having, you know, a real-time view of how the U.S. government spends its money, every payment, every transfer, every allocation. That's the level of access Musk potentially has now. That sounds like a lot of insight. Does the article suggest that he could, you know, influence these financial flows?
It's not necessarily about, you know, directly controlling where the money goes, but more about, like, these subtle nudges and prioritization, you know. Imagine an algorithm that optimizes government spending based on specific criteria. And,
yeah.
And the question is, who gets to set those criteria, right? Whose interests are being served?
So the concern is that Musk's influence could shape how the government allocates resources, potentially favoring, you know, certain industries or initiatives over others.
That's one interpretation, yeah. And when you layer on top of that the potential of CBDCs, things get even more interesting.
Okay, let's break down CBDCs a little bit more. I understand they're like digital versions of traditional currencies.
Yeah.
But issued and managed by central banks. But why are they relevant to this conversation about control?
Well, in theory, CBDCs could offer some advantages. You know, imagine a world where everyone has access to secure and low-cost financial services, regardless of their income or location. They could also offer greater transparency in transactions.
That sounds like it could level the playing field in some ways.
It could, yeah. But here's where the you know, the potential for control comes in. A CBDC system gives the issuer, potentially a central bank influenced by someone like Musk, as the article suggests, a very high level of control over financial transactions.
What kind of control are we talking about here? Would they be able to see every purchase I make?
That's certainly a possibility, but the control could go you know, even deeper than that. Imagine a system where your access to financial services, your ability to get a loan, even your ability to participate in certain economic activities could be determined by an algorithm, and you have little to no control over how that algorithm works.
Yeah, that sounds that sounds a little Orwellian. It seems like we're talking about a significant shift in how power operates in society.
Yeah, the article suggests this this transition from traditional forms of power, like military force or covert operations, to this more subtle form of control. that's exerted through through financial systems and technology.
And it's not just Musk, right? The article also mentioned this trend towards the financialization of everything. What exactly does that mean?
Essentially, it means that, you know, money and markets, they're increasingly influencing every aspect of our lives, you know, from healthcare and education to social interactions and even personal data. More and more things are being treated as commodities to be bought and sold.
So it's like we're moving towards a world where everything has a price tag.
In a way, yeah. And the question is, who gets to set those prices? Who benefits from this system, and who loses out?
Those are big questions.
Yeah.
And it feels like AI is playing a major role in all of this.
Absolutely. Artificial intelligence is being integrated into, you know, every aspect of our lives, from the algorithms that determine what we see on social media to the systems that assess our credit worthiness.
The article specifically mentions Musk's development of Grok AI. It claims that it could further concentrate economic power. How so?
Well, imagine an AI system that can, you know, analyze massive amounts of financial data and make predictions about, you know, market trends, investment opportunities, and even individual spending habits. Now, imagine that system is controlled by someone like Musk, who already has a significant financial stake in many different industries.
It sounds like he could potentially use that information to his advantage.
Yeah.
To, you know, further increase his wealth and influence.
That's the concern. And it ties into the broader question of whether these new financial tools and technologies, are they going to democratize wealth or simply entrench the power of a select few, a digital oligarchy, if you will.
That brings us back to this this fundamental shift in how power is exercised. Mm-hmm. It seems like we're moving from a world where, you know, power was primarily held by governments and institutions, to one where it's increasingly concentrated in the hands of individuals and corporations.
That's a key point, yeah. And it raises some serious questions about, you know, accountability, transparency, and democratic control.
It's a lot to wrap our heads around. Are there any historical parallels we can draw on to understand this this new landscape of power?
Well, the article does mention NSSM 200 as a point of comparison.
Right. We talked earlier about how it, you know, framed population control as a national security issue.
Right.
How does that relate to what we're discussing now?
Well, both situations involve, you know, attempts to control resources and influence global dynamics to benefit a select group. In the case of NSSM 200, it was about maintaining U.S. dominance by limiting the growth of potential rivals. Today, with figures like Musk, it's about leveraging financial systems and technology to potentially shape the global economy and exert a different kind of control.
So instead of controlling populations directly through things like, you know, forced sterilization or limitations on family size, as was suggested in NSSM 200, we're now talking about a more subtle form of control.
Yeah.
That's exerted through access to finance and technology.
Exactly. Yeah. It's less about, you know, overt coercion.
Yeah.
And more about shaping the environment in which people make decisions, influencing their choices through the design of these systems.
That's a chilling thought. It seems like individual freedom and autonomy are at stake here. But what can be done about it?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And there are no easy answers.
It can feel overwhelming to think about. Is there anything we can do as individuals to navigate this you know, shifting landscape of power?
Well, for one, I think we can be more aware of the systems that are operating around us. You know, we can question the assumptions that are built into these technologies, scrutinize the motivations of those who control them, and demand greater you know, transparency and accountability.
Awareness is key, but it also feels like we need you know, broader societal solutions, right? What role can governments and institutions play in ensuring that these powerful technologies are used ethically and responsibly?
Yeah, that's a crucial conversation to have. You know, we need robust regulations and oversight mechanisms to prevent abuse and ensure that, you know, these systems serve the common good rather than just the interests of a select few.
Okay, so we need to be having conversations about regulation and oversight. What else?
Education is key as well. You know, we need to empower individuals to understand how these systems work, how their data is being used, and how their, you know, choices are being influenced.
So it's not just about waiting for governments or corporations to act. We can take steps to educate ourselves and make informed choices about, the technologies we use and the data we share.
Exactly. And we need to be having these conversations, not just in, academic circles, but in our communities, in our homes, in our everyday lives.
That's a powerful point. The more we understand these systems and the more we talk about them, the better equipped we'll be to navigate this changing landscape and shape the future we want. It feels like we're at this this kind of crossroads where these powerful technologies, AI and financial systems, they can either lead to a more equitable world or they could exacerbate existing inequalities.
Mm. Yeah, it's a pivotal moment for sure. And the choices we make now, both individually and collectively, are really going to have a significant impact on what that future looks like.
And the article talks about the potential for these technologies to be used for good, like promoting, financial inclusion and breaking up monopolies, but also for, less than ideal outcomes, such as concentrating wealth and power in the hands of a select few. It's a lot to consider.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the technology itself, but also about, who controls it and how it's governed. That's why these conversations about regulation, transparency and ethical frameworks are so crucial.
Okay, so we need to be, thinking critically about the role of these technologies in society. But what about the broader geopolitical context? The article mentions that we're living in a time of, increasing instability. How does that factor into all of this?
Well, geopolitical instability often, creates opportunities for those who are seeking to consolidate power. I mean, we've seen throughout history how, periods of uncertainty and upheaval can lead to the rise of authoritarian leaders or the expansion of corporate influence.
So it's possible that these, technological advancements coupled with global instability could create an environment where it's easier for those in power to exert control.
That's one possibility, yeah. And the article suggests that these emerging forms of economic control, they could be even more insidious than traditional methods because they're often less visible and more difficult to challenge.
It's like a subtle shift in the balance of power that's happening right under our noses. And with AI playing an increasingly prominent role, it's hard to even grasp the full extent of what's changing.
Exactly, and that's why it's so important to have these conversations, to shed light on these trends, and to empower individuals to understand the forces that are shaping their world.
So awareness and education are key, as we've discussed. But what are some practical steps people can take to protect themselves and their communities in this evolving landscape?
Well, one important step, I think, is to be, mindful of the data we share and the platforms we use. We often give away vast amounts of personal information without even realizing it. And that data can be used to manipulate us, exploit us, or even exclude us from opportunities.
We're constantly being tracked and analyzed, and most of us are completely unaware of it. And so being, more conscious of our digital footprint is a good starting point. What else?
Supporting organizations that are fighting for, digital rights and privacy, that's another important action. There are groups out there working tirelessly to advocate for, stronger regulations, to hold corporations accountable, and to empower individuals to control their own data.
That's a great point. It's easy to feel, powerless in the face of these massive technological and economic forces. But supporting, these organizations can give us a collective voice.
It's also, crucial to be engaged citizens, to stay informed about these issues and to participate in the political process. We need to demand that our elected officials prioritize policies that protect our privacy, promote fairness and equity, and ensure that these technologies are used for the benefit of all, not just a select few.
So it's not just about, individual actions. It's about collective action. Hmm. About coming together to shape a future where technology empowers us rather than controls us.
Precisely. And it starts with, conversations like this one, with asking tough questions, with challenging assumptions, and with envisioning a different path forward.
Well said. I think this deep dive has given us a lot to think about. It can be overwhelming to contemplate these complex issues, but it's also empowering to realize that that we have a role to play in shaping the future.
I agree. The choices we make today, both individually and collectively, will determine what that future looks like. And by engaging in these conversations, by staying informed and by taking action, we can create a world where technology serves humanity, not the other way around.
This has been a fascinating and at times, unsettling exploration of how economic control is evolving in the digital age. We've covered a lot of ground, from historical examples of covert influence to the potential implications of AI and financial technology. It's a topic that that deserves continued attention and critical thinking.
I couldn't agree more. The more we understand these trends, the better equipped we'll be to navigate this changing landscape and advocate for a more just and equitable future.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We encourage you to continue exploring these issues, to engage in these conversations with your friends, family, and communities, and to consider what role you want to play in shaping the future.